Living in a scientific age, we need citizens who know enough about science to make intelligent decisions about what they do. We've used science to prolong life, to increase security and happiness. But it can also be used for destruction. Are we going to use it constructively? It'll be up to you, and you too.
Hey, Todd, how's it going?
Good. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing really well. And I was talking to my mom the other day, and she was, I was trying to convince her that I could make a car out of pasta, out of spaghetti.
I see.
And I messed it up already. So I was talking to my mom, and I told her that I could make a car out of spaghetti.
Ah, right? Yes.
And you should have seen her face when I drove pasta.
That was a failure all around.
All
and I've
around.
Taken away all of my things except
That's
for...
fine.
Welcome to another episode of the Mark and Todd Cast. I am one of your hosts, Todd Workhoven, and with me, as always, is Mark Middleton. How are you, Mark?
I'm really well.
Good.
We also have the pug live on the Isabel pug cam.
The pug cam, yes. Yeah. I am staying. Oh, there it is. I was staying away from looking at the feed because it continues to distract me. I can only think about one thing at a time, and if I start looking at that. But last week I talked about how I went to Idaho, and on the way back on the 8-hour drive home from where we were in Idaho, I kept writing stuff down on this little post-it note for show topics or things I wanted to remember. And I got that out of the car and I was looking over it today, and there's two things that I want to talk about. One of them is a super weird genetic thing. So on my back, I would say right next to my shoulder blade, about an inch in from my shoulder blade, I have this weird itch.
Okay.
And I have had this itch. It's about the size of a pencil eraser or so. And it's not like a sharp itch. It's kind of like a fuzzy little itch. And I have had an itch in that same spot for as long as I can remember, for like 10, 15 years. Always this one spot. There's never anything there. There's not a mark. There's not a bite. There's not a there's not a mole. There's nothing. It's never discolored. And so I was complaining about it on vacation, and my dad said, I have the exact same thing in the exact same spot.
Your weird little Dutch bodies.
I know. So I don't know if it's related to my freak hand.
Yes,
or if
it is. As a non-medical professional, I make
everything
that.
Is related to my hideous.
Give us the 10-second to those people who don't know. Who
The 10-second thing is, and I don't know if you can see this on the camera or not, but I have a genetic genetic thing that happens mostly in Scandinavian and Northern European men, and it's called Dupuytren's contracture. And what's happening is that the ligaments that go like up to my pinky and ring finger from the base of my thumb are getting, are hardening up for some reason. And it's something my dad hasn't, like all the old Dutch people in my church growing up, you would look over and it pulls your fingers forward into like this claw, and you can't move them because the tendons have all hardened up. So there's nothing you can do about it. Eventually, once it curls my fingers too much that they'll get in the way of stuff.
Become cloven.
I will become cloven. Yes, they will. They will bind my feet and hands
together.
All of my uncles have it, and there's surgeries that you can get done, but it just keeps coming back. So there's like no point, and right now no cure. So yes, maybe my fuzzy itch is related to the what I used to call Dutch hand disease, but is a and actually there's a couple. Margaret Thatcher had it. And I forget, we read it once on the show.
This strange itch on your back?
No.
The Dutch hand disease.
There's a list of, I forget, some well-known people that had the same thing. And every once in a while, someone will pop in a movie. But something else I was wondering about. So every once in a while, when you're in a professional setting or meeting someone for the first time, or you're saying goodbye to them, and you go in for the handshake.
Yes.
Sometimes you do that handshake where it doesn't, like, the hands stop before, like, because in a handshake, your hands kind of stop at the thumb and you shake. But you do that thing where you both just grab the, like, fingers. The fingers of the hand. And I was wondering how do you rectify that?
So I think it is to open further, like, you're closing too quickly.
Right. And I don't mean, like, how to avoid that. I mean, but like, every once in a while it happens or whatever. So is there something like, let's say
I'm screwed this up. Let's high five. Mr. President.
Mr. Takagi. Yes. Mr. President. Is it like, should you, like, should you mention it and back out and go in? Like, you can't leave like this. I was wondering if there was a social norm.
Depends on who it is, what the relationship is, and what you're wearing.
But yeah, that's just the worst, when you leave like that and you just grab this from each other. Like, oh man.
Yeah.
He's going to think it's what my handshake is like. It's not what my handshake's like.
Right.
Should I say something?
Yes.
Anyway. Well, are you ready to dive in some news?
News on the march.
All right. I have a bunch of Portland-centric stories. The first one isn't really having a lot to do with science or anything, but is relevant to you and I, and if Heidi is listening, to Heidi, because Pacific Foods... Campbell's Soup is buying Pacific Foods for $700 million. So Pacific Foods is a Tualatin-based natural foods company, and they make the broths and the soups on those square shelf stable boxes called Tetra Pak.
Tetra Pak.
Which I looked into buying stock in, but they're a privately owned company, which I was disappointed. But yeah, Pacific Foods sells a ton of stuff, and you and I and Heidi and our friend Rebecca, we used to do the packaging and their websites for them.
Yep.
But they were sold to Campbell's. Pacific Foods employs more than 500 people in Oregon and said it expects to continue operations of its facilities here after the deal is completed. Denise Morrison, who is Campbell's president and chief executive soup maker extraordinaire, Denise Morrison said in this crafted bit of PR, "The acquisition is consistent with our purpose, quote, real food that matters for life's moments."
My word.
"Pacific is an authentic brand with a loyal customer following. The acquisition allows us to expand into faster growing spaces such as organic and functional food." Now, what is a functional food?
Functional food.
Is that like an ingredient? Like, what else would a non-functional food be?
Twinkies are non-functional food.
I don't know that Twinkies are food, but a functional food that must have something to do with.
I don't know, but
because they do all the broths and stuff like that. But right. Pacific Foods has generated $218 million in net sales in the 12 months, in the last 12 months. Another Oregon story. Oregon is going to raise the legal age for purchasing cigarettes from 18 to 21. It's going to be the third state after Alaska and Hawaii to do that. It's Senate Bill 0754. It allows those 18 to 21 to still possess tobacco, but they can't purchase it. The bill actually overcame fierce opposition. The state's leading cause of preventable deaths is apparently smoking. The bill easily attracted the support of public health advocates, but it also found powerful woes. The Willamette Week reported that the world's largest tobacco company, which is called what, do you think?
Tobacco Inc.
Tobacco Inc. It is called Altria, I imagine they keep changing the names of parent companies so that people can't.
Like Quest and CenturyLink.
Yeah. So it's not like Philip Morris or Joe Camel. I wonder if he's like, I was having the conversation about Uncle Ben, Aunt Jemima, and like some of those other characters. And
they walked into a bar.
They walked into a bar and they all ordered pancakes. But if you read their official stories, they like have backstories. And like now they, like Uncle Ben isn't called Uncle Ben anymore. He's like the actual company president. Like they have these backstories to fit these characters now. And I wonder what Joe Camel's is, if he's still alive. Do you remember Joe Camel?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Betty Crocker.
That's right.
Was
she real? I forget.
I don't know that. And I was actually thinking about this last week because about 15 years ago, maybe 12 years ago, they redid the picture for Betty Crocker.
Yes.
And they used an amalgamation of people from around the world, and she was ethnicless and
devoid of any
whiteness or darkness, or like she was just all people and all colors and all
she was all things to all people.
Exactly.
Surprisingly, yeah. Betty Crocker is not an actual real person. She is the brainchild of advertising campaign developed by the Washburn Crosby Company, a flour milling company started in the late 1800s that eventually became General Mills.
It was just a bunch of white dudes sitting around a table, you know, making decisions.
Who's the cookie lady? Isn't a brand of cookies that is a lady? It's not Otis Spunkmeyer, whatever that is.
Mrs. Fields?
Mrs. Fields is a real person.
Yes.
I do remember that. So that was your cookie talk this week on the Mark and Todd cast. But yeah, they're raising the age of buying cigarettes from 18 to 21.
So let's talk about functional foods.
Yes. Oh, that's right. That was like three stories ago.
So functional foods, also called nutraceuticals. They're food containing health-giving additives and having medicinal benefits.
Oh, okay. So this is a marketing angle, yes. Not a real thing. All right. I see. All right. Paul McCartney is finally going to regain the Beatles' rights after nearly 50 years of not having the catalog. So in 1969, Paul McCartney and John Lennon attempted to buy Northern Songs, which was the original publisher of the Beatles catalog, but they lost out to ATV Music. Decades later, went up for sale again, but Michael Jackson bought them on the advice of Paul McCartney, who said, the real money is in publishing rights. So Michael Jackson bought them for $47.5 million in 1985. In early 2016, Sony announced that it would buy out Jackson's 50% stake of ATV Music for $750 million, creating another chance for McCartney to negotiate the rights. So it talks a little bit about the U.S. Copyright Act. So the law states that for songs published before 1978, rights can be reverted back to the original author after 56 years, or 35 years for songs after 1978. So like if you lose the rights to your own song, eventually you will gain them back, which I think is kind of fair. And so it is coming up on the 56th anniversary for all this. And so it looks like Paul McCartney is finally going to get those back because he needs the money.
How many billions does he have now? He's sterling. He was one of the first music
billionaires
to become a sterling billionaire.
What's a sterling billionaire?
To have £1 billion instead of $1 billion US dollars.
Okay.
And so it's like $1.5 billion.
Still not the richest person in Britain. Who is?
J.K. Rowling.
Yes, it is. Richer than the Queen, she is.
Of course.
And there's a longer story here, but the gist of this one is, it's a Tesla watch. So why don't I play here?
Never ceases to amaze me.
So after a bet between billionaires, South Australia buys an 121 megawatt Tesla battery. So the gist is Tesla, let's see. Several months after a Twitter exchange between Tesla CEO Elon Musk and Mike Cannon Brooks, a billionaire behind the software company in Australia, the billionaire asked Musk if he could deliver 100 megawatts in 100 days to South Australia. And Musk responded in a tweet, "Tesla will get the system installed and working in 100 days from contract signature, or it is free." So now Tesla has won the contract to install the batteries, and his company is going to install them. So he has 100 days to install all of this. It's probably more than $50 million worth of stuff he's putting in. If he cannot do it in 100 days, he is going to have to do it for free.
But he's a... Yeah. How What's the dollar amount on that?
They didn't say for sure, but around 50 million or more.
That's like pocket change.
Yeah, I guess. Anyway.
Okay.
What else do I have? Oh, Mark, are you looking for extra work?
Not really.
Because Oscar Mayer is hiring Wienermobile drivers. Is it your dream to drive a hot dog shaped car?
No, but on our road trip last year, we came across the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile broken down in a mountain pass.
Oh, no.
We stopped. And right then the tow truck arrived, and so we left. And so I wanted, like,
which was shaped as a giant hamburger.
it was a barbecue.
I did see the Wienermobile once in the Tigered Fred Meyer parking lot, and they had a thing where you can either win a T-shirt like with the Wienermobile on it, or like something crappy that I didn't keep. And I won the crappy that I didn't keep is what I won.
I think there's several Wienermobiles. I think there's.
I imagine so.
Yeah, but it's not a big quantity. I think it's like four.
There's a limited supply of Wienermobiles. Yep. But Oscar Mayer announced they're hiring for new drivers, or as they call them. What do you think they call them? It's surprisingly unclever. and not profane.
Fail.
I know. They are called Wienermobile Navigators. One-year hot dogger position offers benefits, competitive pay, and a company car shirt to turn heads. Applicants should carry a college degree because, yes, we live in an America that in order to drive a giant hot dog-shaped vehicle, you need a college degree. Have an appetite for adventure and boundless enthusiasm. So
what else are you going to do with the college degree?
I know, really. You're not going to get a real job anymore. That's all of the news stories I had today.
Cool. We're going to talk.
Let's talk to the Unipiper, which if you're watching us on the Unipiper live stream, you will not be hearing the Unipiper. We will be adding that in later.
You can see the Isabel Pug.
That's right. People who are listening to the podcast cannot see our Isabella Pug live pug cam, wherein she is in her usual spot.
Sleeping
away, those little eyebrows going. So let's go to the Unipiper and we'll check out what's going on around town today, and then we will come back.
Hello, Brian.
Hello, Mark.
How are you? Is this the Unipiper?
It is. I feel like we haven't spoken in a very long time.
You have been on the other coast, and we haven't seen you in like a week.
I know. I've been out of Portland, and I feel like I have no idea what's going on. I don't even recognize the city anymore.
Todd is here with us.
Hi.
As well.
Hello. I am here.
Hey, Todd.
I was just thinking it's weird. My Skype isn't working on my computer for reasons I can't figure out, which is because I have not upgraded my operating system in forever.
Since
the 90s. And so my Skype wouldn't even run an old one anymore, and so we just had to throw it over to Mark's computer. So now Mark's both doing the introduction and getting the Skype call, so
I do everything.
He's taking over the show.
You treat me like a slave.
The Mark and Mark cast.
I was gonna say that.
Oh, zing.
What's been up?
Not a lot. I saw Spider-Man.
Oh, how did you like it?
I liked it. I thought it was really good. It was nothing will ever top the Sam Raimi, Tobey Maguire Spider-Man films, my personal taste. But this one was really good. I can't complain too much about it.
Yeah, I've heard I haven't seen it, but I heard a lot of people on my Facebook feed talking about it, and the ones that were easy. My phone's exploding.
Hello.
The ones who really liked Spider-Man, so it was like best movie ever or whatever. But I've also heard some kind of tepid reviews, so I wasn't quite sure where to place it.
It's somewhere in the middle for me.
Okay.
Spider-Man aside, I am a huge Spider-Man. But what I will remember most about my Spider-Man theatrical experience has nothing to do with Spider-Man. And it has everything to do with one of the movie trailers that was attached to it.
What? Let's see if I can guess. So that came out in 2002, the Spider-Man. That Spider-Man you're talking about?
Or are you talking about the current one?
No, I'm talking about the one I just saw.
Oh. I thought you were like reminiscing about the good old days when Sam Raimi really knew how to make a movie.
No.
Okay. So, yeah.
I was saying that, you know, I was really looking forward to this movie and I did really enjoy it. But what I'm going to take home from this is etched into my mind forever is one of the movie trailers. And I've had this same feeling after seeing this movie trailer before for one other movie where this movie trailer is taking itself so seriously. And at the same time, I'm watching this and thinking, this is a joke, right? This movie has to be, this is a parody. And no, it is a real film. The only other movie trailer that I've ever had the same experience where I was just blown away that it was a real movie was when I first saw the movie trailer to The Core. Do you remember that movie?
With Hilary Swank?
Yeah, when I think the Earth's core stops spinning.
That's right.
Restart it.
That was the ultimate disaster movie.
Yeah, that was in the wake of like Armageddon and
the volcano movies.
Oh, the dueling volcano movies, right. Dante's Peak and
Fiery Furnace.
I forget what the
mountain.
Other one. I'm failing. Okay, but so go ahead.
So
yeah.
This particular movie trailer, it starts off, I'll give you the concept. So in the very near future, to fight climate change, we have launched thermospheric satellites that can control the weather. And well, what happens when terrorists hack those satellites and start weaponizing the weather? And
what?
Then there's this line in the middle that just like I was already like my disbelief was piling up. And then one of the characters says, "There's potential for a catastrophic weather events on a global scale, a geostorm." And it was just like,
I used to drive a geostorm. Wow.
So is there anyone famous in it or like behind it directing it or just it's just a completely random?
It stars Gerald Butler.
Sorry.
And I don't even know who the director is, but after that line I was just like, okay. And then the rest of the trailer plays out and they show scenes of like the beach freezing over and airplanes falling out of the sky.
Yes.
And I'm already telling Sarah by this point, like, come on, they made up the word geostorm for this.
Right.
And then sure enough, the title of the movie is
Geostorm.
What? No.
This sounds like something that would be in the Roland Emmerich catalog of Independence Day and 2012, where every single one of his movies is destroying large areas of. So
wasn't there was that the same guy that did the big earthquake movie couple years ago?
Tomorrow. Yeah, The Day After Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Oh my
God. Wow. I just looked it up and it said, watch the ridiculous trailer for. So, like, everybody seems to be talking about how. And it is director Dean Devlin, who is part of Dean Devlin and Roland Emmerich, were the team that did do Independence Day and the follow ups. I don't see Roland Emmerich's name on the producer credit, but Dean Devlin is there.
So, you just have to watch the trailer. It will
stick
with
blow
you.
Me away. Nice.
So there's a Dean Devlin movie called The Librarians that's set to film in Portland.
That's a TV show, and it's been on for like four seasons. It's one of those that is like, and now it's 12th and final, and like you've never heard of it. But yeah, that's filmed in Portland, The Librarians. I'm not quite sure it's about.
And downtown.
Yeah, they're always looking for extras.
Really?
Yeah, but they always do it like last minute. They're always looking for like the next day.
Yep.
Okay.
Awesome.
There are some things coming up in Portland this week that you should be aware of. Wednesday is the announcement of the Willamette Week's Best of Portland. Ooh. 2017.
Awesome.
And are they, how are they announcing them?
I think that is the day that the issue comes out and it's just going to be in
Thursday morning's Willy Week.
Okay.
And then later that evening, there's a, they're hosting a Best of Portland party. Somewhere up in Northwest.
Fancy.
Why is that important to us? What's the connection that we have there?
Well, the Unipiper may have been nominated as best local celebrity.
Who won that last year?
Oh, what was that guy's name?
Brian the Unipiper Kid?
That guy.
That's awesome. Him. Awesome.
Yeah, so You're In It Again and Fun Employment Radio is in again. They won last year, so yeah, that's very exciting.
So we will definitely report back on that. The Portland Highland Games is coming up this weekend. If you like bagpipes and you want to see more of them, this is your chance to do that. I can't promise there will be anyone on a unicycle with flaming bagpipes. But if you like kilts and large men throwing sticks, this is a treat.
Who doesn't?
Note to self.
Wasn't this last week the wife carrying competition in Norway or Finland or something? They have a relay, not
that
a
was
relay
right
race.
After they chase the big wheel of cheese down the hill or whatever they do.
I also love that. Yeah. That competition.
Or they ride the log. There's another one there. They ride a huge log down a hill and like it's super dangerous looking.
Everybody dies. Yeah. Okay. Sorry, Brian. I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
That's fine. Those have nothing to do with the Highland games.
Exactly.
They're fun nonetheless. This is the one, though, that I am most intrigued by because it's in its 63rd year, and I have not heard of it before, but the 63rd annual Robin Hood Festival in Sherwood, Oregon.
Oh, yeah.
Have you been?
I have not been. I've heard of it though, because I always make that Sherwood connection.
Yes.
For Sherwood Forest.
Sherwood Forest, huh?
It looks awesome. It's like a weekend Renaissance festival.
And where is it at? Does it say
Sherwood, Oregon?
Sherwood.
I guess I was looking for. I have a new client in Sherwood, Oregon. So perhaps I will be dragging some poor kid
down
to
at the park, maybe
Robin Hood Festival
next to Oaks Park. Maybe I don't know. I'm just guessing.
Sherwood is way by Tualatin.
Oh, Sherwood. The other Sherwood, not Selwood.
Selwood, not Selwood. Sherwood.
Sherwood
by Tualatin.
Yes.
No.
Nice.
There will be 20,000 people there, and they also have an international archery tournament that takes place as part of the festival.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
And people will sing to you, and there is a knighting ceremony and a family stage and horse rides.
Wow. Yes. Huh. That is quite something.
So if you didn't get your fix at the Oregon Country Fair this weekend.
Oh, that's right. The
Oregon Country Fair.
Or the Rainbow Gathering.
Head out to Sherwood this week.
Yeah. The party never stops.
Seriously. It's a summer-long party.
Speaking of summer-long party, have you heard about the sea pickles?
No. I know about the sea cucumbers.
Different animal here.
Okay.
The sea pickle is a tunicate. So it's a gelatinous jelly-like sea creature, but there's a certain type that stick together and grow 1 to 2 feet. They can grow longer, sometimes as big as 30 feet long, and they look like clear pickles. They are most common off the coast of Australia, but for whatever reason this year, they are making their way to the west coast of the United States, and they are now washing up from Southern California all the way up to Alaska.
They are gross looking.
Strange.
Yes.
Much like a sea cucumber. I wonder what makes it a sea pickle and not a sea cucumber. It's vinegar.
Vinegar. Yeah, well, there's a vinegar joke there somewhere.
A sea cucumber is just one single organism. But these sea pickles are actually a colony of smaller organisms.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
God, the ocean is terrifying. I was just looking at another thread of like there's a Russian deep sea fisherman that's always posting these pictures of like the deep sea things that get caught in the nets that they're trawling, and just like it's all so gigerish and alien and just terrifying.
Well, when they come with a description that says covered in small bumps and when touched they ooze pus.
Just like a regular Craigslist ad.
The sea pickle. Boy, yeah, that is just really strange looking. I might use that for the picture for today's show. Nice. So they're washing up ashore all over the Northwest. That's the beware. Do they hurt you? And he's gone.
Brian, are you still there? Oh, hold on.
He went to get a sea pickle. What? He can't hear.
Hold
us
on.
Now.
I think I know the problem.
Brian, you're still there.
Yeah, don't go anywhere. Brian, can you hear us now?
Yes.
Okay. So
the voice has never stopped in my
okay.
head.
Okay. So they did in ours, and we'll edit that out. But I turned on the external screen and it took hold of the audio feed as well. And so, but that volume was turned down. So, in effect, by showing the pictures of sea cucumbers over to Todd, I turned you off.
Sea pickles. No, but so they're coming all up and down the Pacific Northwest. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, I think the bigger problem is that they're getting in the way of fishermen and they're clogging their nets. And it says it took scientists 5 minutes to collect 60,000 of them in the Columbia River.
Oh my gosh!
They're coming our way.
Wow!
There's just an advancing army of sea pickles on its way toward us, unstoppable.
And they can grow really big too.
Yeah.
We're looking at some pictures of them, and these ones are maybe 8 inches long.
And some of them are clear, and some of them are, they're all knobbly. Ugh, weird. It's no gooey duck, but it's still disgusting.
Or a lamprey.
A lamprey. Have you seen the gooey duck, right?
Those yes.
things that they get in the sand. Ugh.
We should go find a gooey duck.
just bring it back and put in a tank in the, right behind us here in the studio.
Totally.
Lastly, in Portland, also on Wednesday, the same day as the Best of Portland party, the city of Portland is set to officially open their Portland's first official beach, Poets Beach.
I had that story pulled. This. Yes.
Yeah.
I'll just read the little article here because I pulled a little something for it. So yeah, the new swimming beach opens next week. It is Poets Beach. It is the city's first designated swim area on the Willamette. Opens on July 12th. Now.
Yep. Let's unpack that one. Let's unpack that one.
If the river is continuously so full of feces that they warn people about it, why people would want to swim there?
Yes.
Well, it will have lifeguards and jackets available to swimmer. And here's the best part. There will be porta potties
and free needles
and free needles. Yes. So yeah, that'll be under the Markham Bridge, which is the I-5 bridge, on the west side of the Willamette.
It does say that they have eliminated most of the sewage spills that regularly contaminated the river.
In the spring, I'm imagining this beach will be closed because that's when our sewer pipes always overflow into the river.
I hope they have a sign that says something like, now with 50% less poop.
So it's a pilot program. Some hope it will become permanent. So if you would like to go swim in the Willamette, there is a new beach for you.
Yeah, and it's going to be open 7 days a week. And do you know why they call it Poets Beach?
Why is that?
It's because the path to the beach is lined with stones engraved with children's poems about the Willamette River.
Aww.
And probably poop.
And most likely poop.
Perfect.
Wow. So
where to
that's
go from?
That's quite a roundup.
Where to go from there, I guess.
So, that was a pretty fantastic roundup. Where can people learn more about the Unabiber?
Where they always can. They can show up to my door, knock on it, and I'll talk to them.
Just like John,
that's too much work. Like, they can just find me at unipiper.com.
John Lennon in the 70s when those nutcases just showed up to his house all the time and he would invite them in.
Yeah.
Or is it?
Cool. Well, thanks and welcome back to Portland, and we will see you next time.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. Okay. See you, Brian.
Bye.
See you.
All right.
Hey,
It has 10 more seconds. So Vamp, is that what we're supposed to be doing?
Something.
So that was almost the opening to the Mark and Todd cast, that little piece of music, which is fantastic. I stumbled upon that this week. It was something that you had selected to see if we wanted to use that.
Yeah.
Your power cord.
On the cutting room floor. Today, what I thought we would talk about is how light interacts in our atmosphere in several different ways. So there's a lot of related optical illusions or related phenomena. One of them is why is the sky blue, mm-hmm. and why are sunsets more reddish, mm-hmm. and then we'll also talk about mirages.
Yes.
And and let me open up my notes Fata Morgana.
I don't know what that is yet, but like her already.
She's awesome.
She's my favorite supervillain.
She very well might be.
Is it a person or like a thing?
So she's a mythological creature.
Okay. Oh, interesting.
She was mythologically the stepsister of King Arthur, and she had mystical powers.
Okay.
And in some recollections, she was bad and did bad things, and some she was powerful and did really good things.
So she was the Catwoman of the night era.
It's very mysterious.
Interesting.
And so
okay.
There is a light phenomena that is named after her that we'll get to in a minute.
Phenomena.
Phenomena.
Sorry, I'm looking up phenomena for the end of the show right now.
Perfect. So I'm going to move this over here so I can see all the things and
see all of the things.
Nick always wanted to know why the sky is blue. Nick's mom, Darlene, says. So so I even brought props today. So
like accolades?
Not like accolades, not like kudo props, but so if our atmosphere was devoid of any extra particles, if it was just oxygen and nitrogen, we wouldn't have quite the color situation that we have. We would have a little bit of it, but there is a phenomena that is based in the particles that are in the atmosphere, and they scatter light. So,
phenomena.
And the phenomenon.
That's not going to get old, by the way. At least for me, it's not.
Right. So if you're hearing a snoring in the background, that would be directly because of the pug cam
and Mitt's dream.
You can see. Yeah, she's running a little bit there.
Okay.
So, what are the colors of the rainbow, Todd?
Roy G. Biv. Although they kicked one out. Which did they kick out? Indigo or violet? I think they kicked out indigo.
Are you talking about the gay flag? A color out of the gay flag recently.
No, they wanted to add brown.
Right. Oh. And then they kicked it back out.
Oh, did they? It's the Pluto of gay pride stripes.
Right. totally different topic. So red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet. And so the blue, indigo, violet is on one end of the spectrum, and the red, orange, yellow is on the other end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. So what happens is, as light is traveling through the atmosphere, there are dust and microparticles that refract and disperse light at certain wavelengths that we see. And so when light is coming in at kind of a direct angle from overhead, we are seeing the blue that gets fragmented out at very high frequencies. Why don't we see the indigo violet part? Because technically we should, the very high frequencies, the blue, indigo, violet, should be what we see in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
But our eyes receive blue much more than they receive indigo or violet. The receptors that we have are the red, green, and blue cones in our eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And so those, we are seeing a little violet, but it's basically filtered out by our brain. But the blue is what we see primarily in the overhead. When the sun goes down and we are looking through more of the atmosphere at it, what we are seeing is the light that's left over after the blue has scattered out of it.
Okay.
If you think about it that way. So yeah. Have a little visual demonstration. I've basically compacted as I hold a bowl of water over my computer. This won't go bad at all, I'm sure. So let's do this. I'm going to go to the Mark Cam. And so this...
So is that just water in there?
Yeah. So it's water and just a little milk to simulate a thick atmosphere with a lot of stuff in it. And so if I shine a light over here, and boy, we'll see a little bit of it. So the amount of blue that you see is pretty significant, especially as you are getting closer to the light source.
Right.
You can see if you were to categorize that as more bluish or more reddish or more orangish,
yeah,
you would definitely call that more bluish.
Yeah, yeah, right? Yeah.
But if you look at the end, the light that is making it through all of the atmosphere that's kind of left over is more of the orangish and red tones and less of the blue.
Uh-huh.
Are you seeing that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
More yellows.
More yellows. And so this is the Tyndall effect. And there was a guy and his last name is Tyndall. His name was John Tyndall. And he was a physicist that lived from 1820 to 1893. And he did a lot of things in physics in the 19th century regarding magnetism and the properties of air and the properties of light and properties of magnetism. He was a really phenomenal guy and really significant in that period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And go back to
the mix. Are we going to see a picture of him?
No.
And we talked about it before on the show, I believe, but I can't remember like anything that we've ever talked about the show. I can't remember a thing that we've talked about.
Why
in like we're talking about the color of our sky being the blue ranges, mm-hmm. and then the sunsets get into more reds and purples and stuff like that. We never hit green. It goes all the way from the one end of the scale to the other, and there is never, unless it's a tiny sliver or if it's like stormy skies in the Midwest,
right.
they'll say that they see a green. And I forget there's some crazy reason why that aspect is sometimes filtered out or harder to see or something like that.
But yeah.
It drives me crazy because you can get bright color of any... Or the bright sky of any color except for a green
one. Except for green. And you do see like occasionally some sunsets are greenish.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
This will be live Google. I bet. Yeah. Somebody wants to listen back to the last 90 episodes and figure out when we talked about that and what we decided. That would be fantastic.
And then a clear cloudless daytime sky is blue because molecules in the air scatter the blue light. Doesn't say why. Why is the sky never green? It can be blue or orange, the two most common colors. The sky does not skip over the green range of frequencies. The sky is green. Done.
There is no spoon.
There is no spoon. Remove the scattered light from the sun and the moon and even the starlight.
Wait a minute.
And if you so wish, you'll be left with something called air glow.
This guy just sounds like an angry scientist. Well, why don't you go remove the rest of the light and you'll see that green is there. You come back to me when you're done.
So, I'll come up with an Eli 5 on this one and get back to you. There are a couple of very green things, but one is clearly the Aurora Borealis, which is green for very different reasons
and so, scattered sunlight.
And so it's not more complex than that. It is how light scatters, especially with particles in the atmosphere, is why we see blue and green. Or blue, or the shades of red for sunsets.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's a really obvious. I was before the show. I'm like, where can I get a fish tank? And, you know, wanted to make this big elaborate thing. And like, all you have to do is take literally a glass of water right. and add a drop of milk to it. And you can do the exact same experiment and fully own it. Other things that happen because of light bending through the atmosphere mostly happen because of temperature. So when you light a match or you look over a barbecue or whatever, you see the wavy. Yeah. The heat shimmer is word for it. Or also the heat haze is another.
What was the first one?
Heat shimmer.
I barely knew her.
Or the heat haze. And it's the refraction of light because different temperature of air mm-hmm. has different densities and right. it expands or contracts and has a different thickness to it and that is going to bend light differently when it goes through it. So if you've got multiple layers of air with different densities because of temperature primarily, then you will get some really strange effects on light as it travels through it.
Right.
And so that match effect is one, or you look at the air coming out of a jet or something like that, you get that mm-hmm. that wavy effect. So this effect, we can look at a couple natural phenomena, one being mirages.
Phenomena. Yeah, so that was one of the things I wrote down on my little sticky notes because I was driving, and Eastern Oregon is very, very flat and very, very, there's nothing there.
It's
the Kansas of Oregon. It really is. And so there's the long stretches where your road is flat, and it was a hot day that I was driving out there, and you'd get that light shimmer right above the road that makes it look like there's water on it, which is, you know, the classic mirage where you think you see water. And I was trying to figure out, like, I understand I'm seeing the lines from the heat and the distortion of the heat above the road, but I wasn't sure why I was seeing what must be a reflection of the sky. If it looked watery or whatever, and I was trying to figure out what was reflecting that sky image, and making that mirage, and I couldn't quite suss it out. So
yeah, and so there's two. Possible directions that you're going to go with this, either a mirage or the other one, which is the Fata Morgana. What is happening is you have at least two layers of air at different temperatures, and that air at different temperatures is bending light into and out of that other layer. And okay. So as you're looking down the desert and you've got a big flat desert in front of you with the sun beating down on the sand, that sand is heating up and heating up a layer of air above the sand.
Uh-huh.
The air above that is cooler than the air right next to the sand.
Okay.
Okay. So you've got this hot layer of air right next to the ground and you've got a cooler layer above it. So the light from the sky is dipping down into that hot area and being bent back up to your eyes. And so what you are seeing is the sky bent down and then coming back up. And technically you're able to see like the mountains above the mirage. And
right.
So the mountain, the air that you're looking at through to see the mountains.
A holy prepositional nightmare.
Sorry. The air between you and the mountains is one temperature.
Right.
Below that air is
where that difference
is. That hot layer that's bending the sky light. Down
You're
and then
blowing
back
my mind.
Up, back up.
No, I'm looking at a little diagram over here. I Googled Fata Morgana.
Here's a picture, a picture of a mirage. And so we're able to see the mountains and then below the mountains, what looks like to be water.
Uh-huh.
That water is actually the sky
right.
that is being bent down and back up.
Right. And then you see, are we seeing the bottom continuation of the mountains, or is that a reflection of the top of the mountains?
This is a reflection of the top of the mountains, basically. As far as I know, it's right. A really crappy picture. I don't know.
That is JPEG compression that we're looking at.
Yeah. So this is the effect of a mirage. And you know, we have millennia of stories about them because you usually appear in a flat desert. And so it looks like you are seeing water or you are seeing something on the horizon. And as you get closer, it gets further away from you and
drives you mad.
It drives you mad and people die.
Nice.
So that's when the hot air is near the ground and the cool air is above it.
Okay.
Now let's invert those two and make the cold air near the ground and the hot air above it.
Okay.
And now it's going to bend the other way.
Okay.
So think of basically the hot being on top and the light bending into that hot and back down
and
into
back
the cold.
Down.
Okay.
All right.
So imagine being at the beach and looking out over the horizon. The air nearest the ocean is going to be cooler than the air above it. That's warmer. And so there are many examples of something being over the horizon that you can see with your eyes because that light is being bent over the horizon and down into your eyes, or something that is not over the horizon looking like it is floating in the sky because the angle that you are looking at it is where the light went up into the sky and then came back down. So let's check this little...
That only seems to work if the earth was round and not flat, which
true.
Finally people are... Wake up, sheeple.
So Fata Morgana, here's a little video of a Fata Morgana situation. They call them ghost ships.
Okay.
And so that ship is on the water, but we are seeing it float because the light from it is being bent up, as an arc going into that warmer air and then down into our eyes.
So yeah, it looks like it's the sailboat is floating in the air.
And so they call them ghost ships.
Why does that reflect the boat but not the water?
Well, it is, except there's no water at the level that it's reflecting from. So if you can also think of it that the actual horizon that we're seeing is being bent lower than the boat. There's kind of two ways of looking at it, or it's not being bent as much.
Okay.
And so, if we were to take away and make just a big vacuum between us and the boat, it would be really interesting to find out what the truth is of, like, if light were to go straight, would the horizon go up?
I was going
to
say,
Would the boat go down, or both?
Would they meet
in the middle? I think it would be closer to meet in the middle. Which is my favorite pastry is meat in the middle. And no,
that's good. I was gonna say it's the name of your autobiography or something. I couldn't quite piece that joke together though. So
on my tombstone. No, I don't know. And so Fata Morgana is the Italian word for Morgan Le Fay, and Morgan Le Fay is the character from King Arthur times.
Okay.
And so the Italian phrase Fata Morgana means Morgan Le Fay, and they were the ones that coined the term because they were seeing it through the Strait of Messina. They would have these mystical castles appear over the horizon at certain times that were magical and mysterious, and right. they weren't always consistent and they weren't always there. But there were there was a mountain over the horizon that you couldn't normally see, that sometimes when the atmospheric conditions were right, the temperature of the water was right, the temperature of the air was right, then these castles would appear above the water at a distance. And so they took a mystical, magical creature from mythology
right.
and named this effect after her.
Interesting.
So that's where the Fata Morgana
Fata
Morgana. And so, so light in our atmosphere, you know, basically lies to us all the time.
Yeah.
And so what we know as white light from the sun gets refracted and gets taken away from basically by our atmosphere we see the blue refractions mm-hmm. from that white light that then effectively that white light is filtered. The blue is taken out and you're left with the orangish reddish that is seen during our sunsets. And then we have mirages and Fata Morgana, and those are bending of light above and at great distances.
Because that was the kind of the thing that struck me when I was seeing them all when I was driving, was not just that. Like, I always remembered you'd see the thing that just looked like the watery layer, but I really paid attention to how, like, when a truck would drive by or something like that, how you would see the actual upside down reflection of the truck in the mirage. And it's interesting to hear that it's like light tumbling down, like in a wave crashing on the shore, how it's just all tumbling around. Yeah. How weird.
Our world is interesting and just always
between mirages and sea pickles, we're all going to die.
Sea pickles.
So, well, that was interesting. Good. Yeah. That answered my question. I'm glad I wrote that down right next to, I want to see a map of all the high tension power lines versus highways in America. So I will be looking that up as well.
And the pug is still sleeping, but she has moved her head. So there, that's the
sleep
pug cam.
Sleep tight, pug. Who is deaf and probably blind now? Is her sight coming back?
So we had an incident a week ago. Did I show you the video? I showed you the video. Of that.
Yeah.
Okay. So we had an incident where Isabel was out in the backyard when I came home, and she's mostly deaf, so she couldn't hear me. But she always sees me, but she was laying in the yard facing the sun. And I was also facing her, in the shade. And so because of her situation, I'm surmising that she couldn't see me. You know, she'd been looking into the sun. I don't know if there had been sunspots or what. But for whatever reason, she couldn't see me. But she smelled me first.
Right.
But other than that one instance, we haven't had any other events where we've noticed that she has been limited in her visual capacity.
Okay, well, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us on episode 91 of the Mark and Toddcast. Next week, we will be here, but not as the Mark and Toddcast, as Portland at the Movies. We will be joined with Brian the Unipiper Kid, and we will be watching the 1972 Raquel Welch movie called Kansas City Bomber, which classic. Despite being called Kansas City Bomber, takes place completely in Portland. the story, which I've watched, I'm going to have to watch it again, is the story, and I say story in quotes because there is barely a story here, but Raquel Welch is a roller derby girl, and she gets in a feud with another roller derby girl in Kansas City, and the loser has to leave Kansas City forever. And so Raquel Welch has to move to Portland to become a roller derby girl here, and she just gets in a heap of trouble.
Hmm.
So we will be discussing that next week. It was all filmed in Portland, mostly at the not the convention center.
The Coliseum.
No, the one up across the way from the horse track.
Oh, the Expo Center?
Yeah, I believe a lot of it was filmed. Huh. Most of it was filmed there, but we'll make sure when we talk about that next week. So join us for that. Other than that, get a hold of us at facebook.com/markandtoddcast or markandtoddcast.com for all of the rest of the episodes that we have done. If you'd like to suggest a topic, just drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you. We will take you out this week with Mana Mana, which I will always now hear as...
Here's the pug.
Mana Mana. Mana Mana. Mana Mana.